President Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for at least the next hour, and we've got a great show planned for you this evening. I did a broadcast earlier this afternoon on BBS Radio called the TNT Hour. Don't know how many of you listened to that, but I talked about today, which is, it happens to be the 16th of July on the West Coast, now the 17th on the East Coast. Well, on the afternoon of the 16th, I spoke about the illusions going on in the economic world and the reason why banks are collapsing and how we have this imaginary or illusory. They like to call it usury, and it is usury, but it's also illusory finance system based on money made out of thin air. And I went into a lot of detail. You might want to go into the archives and listen to that, because I went on for a good 55 minutes about what is happening in the world today and how we must look at it. We need to be discerning about our reality and realize that our reality has been created for us as an illusion. And we're going to go several notches or several steps above that tonight with our guest, who has authored the book, The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, the story of David Wilcock, as well as a new piece, which is available as a free PDF on his website. And it's called Questions and Answers with the Elohim. And we're going to be talking to him about the Elohim tonight. Maybe if we're lucky, we'll get a message from them as well. With that, I would like to introduce tonight's guest. He's been on Evident Footprints a number of times, and he's becoming a favorite. My listening audience tells me they enjoy the subject matter and his approach, which is one of discernment and integrity. And with that, I welcome again to Evident Footprints, Mr. Wynn Free. Wynn, how are you?
Well done.
How are you doing this evening?
What am I doing? I'm wondering what we're going to talk about tonight. And where we're going to start.
We'll talk at least about 55 minutes, I can tell you that.
I said to myself, God, are these people bored with me yet? What is there to talk about?
Well, the message that you've been bringing forth certainly deserves some attention, some discussion, and some examination. And especially in light of the things that the world has experienced recently. So, we could start there.
Well, you know, if I'm going to start with what's really on my mind, and I ask this question, and the question is, you know, we've talked about, I've been on your show for like probably three or four times now, and it's hard, okay, you know, I'm giving away a free book called Questions and Answers with the Elohim. Mm-hmm. And one person requested the book. And so I ask myself, why are people not requesting my book? Why am I not approaching this right? Do they not believe it's true? You know, I'd like, if anyone wants to phone up, I'd like to hear a point of view from the audience, because I know that people are liking me. I mean, you're saying they like me, you're getting a good response. But to me, it's really not, it is about me, I'm part of it, but it's, if I'm doing what I say I'm doing, if I'm really doing that, then this is not, this is a big thing, a really big thing. And it's like, it took me quite some time to myself to say, you know what, this is real. I'm doing what I think I'm doing. And not only is it real, but it's really important. It's important, and maybe I'm not making the point of how important it is. Maybe I'm missing it somehow on the show that we're doing, because if I made the point, people would ask for the book, because if I have it right, I've written a book which is partially channeled, partially my experience, which builds the story, tells the story of the things that happened to me. And we've talked about it before. You know, whenever we go on, I figure, geez, are we hearing the same people, or are there new people tonight? In other words, have the people that are listening tonight heard us in our previous conversations? But for those that haven't, I've had this unusual case of what I call interdimensional communications, communicating with what identifies themselves to be group souls that can penetrate this realm as a vibration and can actually work with people, protect, give them protection. There's been healings that have happened, and it's been very consistent, and it's been very loving, the whole thing. And there are many people, a small group of people, I won't say many, but a small group of people that have had amazing stuff and transformations around my material. So when I talk about it, I mean, you know, we talk about it in our heads. Like for example, Don, why don't you make a comment to what I'm saying?
Yeah, so, I'm glad you asked.
Thank you. I mean, what it seems to me is.
Do you want my comment? Go ahead.
Go ahead. I'm opening the door. Go ahead.
All right. When you asked a question, and that question deserves an answer. Now I'm listening to you, and I consider myself to be pretty discerning, and I think you may even agree. And for that matter, the message that we had a couple of weeks ago from the group when Daphne was on the show was rather profound. In fact, they were acknowledging and affirming what we were saying. So on that basis, I'm listening to you ask the question, and I'm saying to myself, this is the same response that I get from my research. Now, I have thousands of people that come to my website and read my research. Don't think for a moment that I'm not grateful for every soul that took the time, even those from the intelligence agencies that feel that somehow I'm a threat to the status quo and that they have to keep tabs on what I'm saying, especially when it has to do with the truth, because I'm revealing things from another plane, really. I'm bringing it down to this frequency, and this mode of communication that we're using right now, and I'm putting it in writing, and I'm asking myself, everyone I talk to, all the things I see on the internet, the blogs that I've landed on in the process of doing research, people are asking these questions. Who are these people running for office? Who are the people trying to be the leaders? Why can't we get anything out about them? And I am a source of that information. And I feel very strongly that I'm an accurate source of information that they're not getting from anywhere else, least of all from the people themselves. Okay? And these people are not reading. The mainstream media has everyone in a mind-numbed state that people respond to images and sounds, and they respond much less to the written word. You are experiencing the result of a dumbed-down populace, and I'm not saying our listeners are dumbed down by no means, But I'm saying that people who are listening, maybe hearing this story for the first time, hearing the details, or maybe they've heard it 20 or 30 times, they're not convinced about something, and for them to make a judgment about it without reading the material and seeing the approach that you took, because there's quite a bit more detail in the book than there comes across on this show, they're putting the cart before the horse in making that kind of a judgment. They're letting their prejudices, the fact that they're in the box, in the matrix, affect their perception of a higher consciousness. Even their short of perception, even their imagination that there might be such a thing as higher consciousness. So you're dealing with people from all walks of life. I know I get a large listening audience. I have a lot of people that email me. I have people talking about my show on other shows. They talk about my guests on other shows. Someone like yourself is even mentioned on these shows.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not that the show is not reaching people. It's not that there's nothing valid in your message. It has to do with the people's willingness to expand, their willingness on their own free will, to take that leap of faith and explore that they may be more conscious, or they may be more capable of accomplishment somewhere in their life, maybe finding their purpose, their life's purpose. That's certainly something to strive for. And that's the essence of the message that you're bringing across, and also a message in how to do that and how to see things clearly as they really are, not as they're presented to us. So the presentation has a lot to do with it, but I don't find fault in what you're doing. If I felt that way, I wouldn't be on the radio.
I'll tell you what I think. I'm just thinking out loud. And that is that, do you know, have you ever heard the term dark night of the soul?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what that is?
Well, I think we're living in that time right now.
Our planet is going through a collective dark night. But do you know what it means for, you know, I think it was a Catholic term. Right? For Catholics at one point. Mystical Catholics. And the idea of a dark night of the soul was that when a person was, most people live in a level of illusion to a higher or lower extent, where what comes in is highly filtered. And so they see things and perceive everything through that filter. And the filters, of course, are different for everyone, but people live in certain neighborhoods, they come from certain families, certain religions, people that watch TV all the time. It's like they walk around, and when they look at something, when they're around anything, they don't perceive it directly. They perceive it through a filter. And no one can see their own filter, because if they did, they would get away from it. So it's like you and I are talking, and we have to assume even you and I have filters, and even everyone that's listening has a filter. But no one can see their own filter. Does that make sense?
Yeah, you know, I may agree with you to a certain extent, and maybe 99.9%, and I think some of us have antennas,
uh-huh.
If you know what I mean.
Antennas instead of filters.
Right? Yes, and my antennas, you see, my antennas are always out, so to speak.
Right.
And so I am always discerning. Now, I didn't used to do that. This is a facility that I acquired over time by paying attention to perceiving what is real and comparing it to what I began recognizing as illusion. I guess that's a form of consciousness, is it not? It's a sign of awakening. And so I'm exercising those muscles as opposed to accepting everything at face value, because face value is usually the veil.
Well,
does that make sense, what I said?
That makes sense, but I still think you and I have filters. I mean, they're smaller filters, but they're still filters. In fact, I think if you didn't have a filter at all, you couldn't be in this realm. Because if you didn't have a filter, you would be totally one with the cosmos.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be too much to have a body, to be in a state of consciousness.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree with you on that basis. I think you're talking about, let's say, the filter that keeps the subconscious in the subconscious realm, for example.
Yeah. And so it's like this is, to a certain extent, within this realm, a filter is part of goes with the territory of being in the realm. The problem is when the filter gets small and people are cut off from each other, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And
well, yeah, when we're cut off from the source, we are, in essence, acknowledging that separation is valid, even if it's not true. We can cut ourselves off from the source through our consciousness or our lack thereof through our thought patterns and our belief systems, which are primarily designed for us on this in this realm.
So a dark night of the soul is when someone starts to see their filter and recognizes it for what it is and decides they want to get through it, or at least get through it to a smaller filter, and experience things in a more expansive way. And what happens is there's a reason why those filters are in place, at least a perceived reason, and I think the perceived reason is that the filter protects us from pain. And that when you start to remove the filter, pain comes up. Sometimes huge pain. So people keep their filter until they're either ready to face their pain, or they're backed into a corner and they have no other choice but to go through something that they have been avoiding most of their life.
Well, yeah, on that basis, would you agree that denial is a filter that keeps a person from facing some pain?
Denial. Yes. I mean, in other words, absolutely, because, you know, for example, you and I know that things are, I mean, one of the things is things are breaking down, and the future is going to have great difficulties attached to it, we expect. And that, to acknowledge that means you have to look at life differently. And most people, even now, you don't need to be a psychic. It's kind of in your face. It's in your face, it's on the news, it's everywhere. Except people are still going around like that's not real. And what would happen if that filter broke down in someone? What would happen, say, if they knew in 6 months there was going to be no gas? Now, we don't know that. But maybe sometime in the next 5 years that may be true. It might be in the next 6 months. Or the supermarkets weren't going to have food in them in 6 months. What would happen? if you really knew that. There were going to be no, the colleges were going to close down. The airlines were going bankrupt. There will be no more tourists in your town. I mean, I read articles that say that's coming up, that the airlines are running at a deficit,
mm-hmm.
and they can't keep doing it, and now they're charging extra for this and that and the other thing. But, you know, how do you face this? How do you look at this? What do you do? What's important? Well,
that's a good point you're bringing up. How many people think of walking to where they have to go, number one?
Mm-hmm.
Or jogging to where they have to go, or running to where they have to go. Now, when I was a teenager, and even into my 20s and into my 30s, and up to my early 40s, I was running 20 miles a day because I loved running. And it's nothing for me to run 10 miles or to walk 10 miles to get someplace if I chose mm-hmm. to do that. But we have become so dependent on someone else or something else doing things for us. And we have not made valid use of the free time that we have gained from that. And so people will be forced, there's a solution to obesity in those that are going to be walking if there is no gas. But most people will not even think about that as an option. Or riding a bicycle. People will not think of those things because it requires more effort than they are willing to put out. And that could be the very answer you were looking for when you were asking why people weren't ordering your book, which is free.
Right.
So that shows
maybe,
you...
Maybe it's more effort than they want to put out. But, you know, another thought that crossed my mind just in this conversation is the book kind of is one of those things that can provoke a dark night, because here, if you accept the fact that I'm talking to these beings who are, they say they're the creators of this realm, and that they are working with this realm, they can look at things, they can see patterns, they're trying to help us, and they can't violate free will, so we need to ask. And, it's one thing to have an idea of a God that's far away, that's a mystery, wonder where he is, and now suddenly you got this voice that's saying that that's who they are, and speaking back and forth fairly straightforwardly, explaining how things work. There's a lot of responsibility in accepting that they are who they are, and if you read my material, it puts you in the position of having to really make your own evaluation if they are who they are and if they're giving good information that you can trust. Because now the problem is when you increase the level of light coming in your direction, it increases your shadow. And when your shadow is increased, your pain is increased until the shadow is worked out. That makes sense?
Yeah.
So, it's a topic that people don't even like to deal with. I'm saying, I wonder why I'm here. If no one cares, why talk about it?
Well, there's so many different flavors and colors and manifestations of pain that people just cringe when they think about it. In fact, we're living in a society that takes pills to cope with pain.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They're seeking the answers from outside instead of looking within.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you this with all sincerity. There is no greater pain than to go through a process which leads you to a death. Even if you come back from that experience, okay, and it's labeled a near-death experience, there is no pain greater than that in the realization that you might not have accomplished what you came here to do. That therein lies the pain. There is no physical pain that we cannot overcome. In fact, dying and transcending into another dimension is painless. The anguish that one feels is a type of pain that that can only be accomplished by resetting yourself upon the path, or reinitiating your original purpose, or recognizing it, or remembering it, putting it back together again and following it. So, yes, that's true what you're saying. I can tell you from firsthand experience, the worst thing that can happen to a person in their life is that they leave their body before they have accomplished their mission.
Mm-hmm.
That is the realization that came to me twice on the other side. And when I came back... I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, that's probably what makes somebody need to reincarnate. Because they carry that need to fulfill something that they didn't do, and it makes them come back into this realm in a future time.
Yeah, well, I was told the second time, well, actually both times, I was told that I had to come back, that my mission was too important for the world.
It was your near-death experiences, right?
Yes. My mission was too important for the world and to my own growth to not do that. I would have to come back in some other form. But everything had been created. The first time was out of my hands. Someone else made a decision. And on my behalf. Okay.
Did your listening audience know about this experience with you?
I have not shared that with my listening audience yet. But I refer to it, and I speak with the authority of having been through the experience. They sense, you know, the reality of it.
Why don't you share? You want to share it? Do you want to?
This is not the time.
Okay.
Nor,
all right.
You know, we would have to schedule a 2-hour show to do that at least.
I see. Okay.
You know, to describe the story. I was offered a movie contract for my story. It was so compelling what I went through, and it led me upon the path I'm on today. Absolutely led me on that path. So you know, it's an issue of going through the details and explaining it, because it began with a vision. It began with a metaphysical experience that gave me the direction on moving to another part of the country. And in 3 years' time, almost to the day, it was basically 2 weeks after the vision, and 3 years and 2 weeks after the vision that everything came true.
Mm-hmm.
Even the vision was so accurate that images that I didn't understand became perfectly clear later on, you know, when I came back. And I was even foretold things that would happen while I was out of body and in another realm. I was foretold things that would happen, and sure enough, they began happening instantly the moment I came back into my body. So it's a very profound experience, and I learned quite a bit about death on a conscious level, that there's nothing to fear other than dealing with your own conclusions about whether or not you fulfilled your mission and you fulfilled your oath. I had two separate recollections of having taken an oath.
While you were alive or prior?
I had the recollection of the oath in the death state, we'll say.
I see.
Okay, so these were...
You made an oath while you were in the death state, or...?
No, I had the recollection of the oath, of taking the oath in the death state.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm fully conscious of what those oaths were, coming back into the body, if you understand my meaning.
Yes.
Okay, so I'm adding this to what you're saying, because I've had plenty of time. I've had years. The second experience now, in a few months, it'll be 8 years. In a couple of months, in 2 months, it'll be 8 years since that event.
Mm-hmm.
And what I have what I came back with and what I've experienced has been a totally different experience. Mm-hmm. The first time, every turn, I met some force that was trying to stop what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And the second time, I came back with a revived spirit of sorts, with a deeper understanding of ways to make this happen, and that was to not ignore the spiritual gifts mm-hmm. that I had. Not that I ever mm-hmm. ignored them before, but I brought my gifts into the forefront.
Mm-hmm.
See, people can relate to that because it is real. And it's so real that it becomes blatantly obvious how much this reality is all an illusion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I speak these things from having been there, having done that through my experience, which becomes mm-hmm. part of my waking consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Unless I choose to repress it, unless I choose to deny it. Well, obviously I didn't deny it. And the things that I grew up having difficulty speaking about because no one else would listen, now people are clamoring to hear these messages.
Mm-hmm.
So the manner in which you in terms of your message and your cause, you're looking to see response. The first aspect of what you should anticipate should be one of quality, not quantity. If you have one person that has achieved total consciousness, you've done your mission. If you are fortunate enough to influence 10 people.
Well, you know what? I do influence people. I do that. And I get some amazing emails sometimes from people who have been influenced by the work I do, and sometimes I can't believe some of the things. You know, I do a conference calls,
mm-hmm.
and on the conference calls, I've got something very unusual going on, where I have these group souls. Now, when I say group souls, people that hear the word group souls, they probably think like, "Oh, there's a bunch of guys sleeping in tents." I don't know. When you think, what is a group soul? It's from this realm, it's hard to imagine. But one time they described themselves like if you can imagine that the soul is an energy unit that's somewhat amorphous. And it can join another energy unit, and three energy units can join together. And in fact, all of us are having an interweaving of energies all the time, wherever we are in life. So, as I understand it, a group soul is an interweaving of millions or billions of individual souls, like yours and mine, but operating as a team. And they're pure energy, and it's hard for me to imagine how they are, because I'm just at the receiving end of them speaking to me. But one time through David Wilcock, they said, we're like a huge amoeba spread out through the cosmos, and they can feel when our energy calls on them, they can move into our energy field, and they can connect with us. But it's like a frequency. It's like a frequency on a radio station. You have to learn the frequency in order to tune them in. And that when we do these conference calls, the people that have kept coming into the call have learned to tune the frequency in. So we have people all over the country that are having this upliftment of energy in their space. They feel the presence of these guys in their space. And they can actually ask them for something, and many of them get a response, not necessarily a verbal response, but they get some kind of transformation of something that happens in their life indicating that it's real. And to my understanding, it's these group souls who have operated as a team and been involved in our realm and were very much involved in the creation of religions and spiritual groups, but almost all the time they get corrupted after they start. And they start because somebody or a group of people were able to actually connect with them. And when somebody actually connects, it is profound. And it changes you. I mean, the stuff I'm doing is no longer dependent on me. It's got its own motion. If I die tomorrow, there's things about it that would continue. Now, to me, that's very satisfying because it means I've created something, or I've catalyzed something to occur that has a momentum of its own and that can continue to help and work with people even if I'm not there, which it does do. The group, the conference calls are going on, many of them during the week. I'm not there, and the energy is still there of them. And like to give you an idea of someone who came into one of my conference calls, and then they sent me an email. If you are drawn, did I ever send you these? I don't know if I did. If you are drawn, join. Jump in with both feet if your heart is true. Beyond words or explanations. Pure love. And what else really matters? Now that person had an epiphany experience with the energy on the line. And somebody else had come to one of my talks. Actually, it was a workshop. And they said, I can honestly say, I have never in my life felt that kind of energy, love, compassion, and wisdom flowing so freely in one place before. It was beyond my wildest expectations and changed my life forever. I mean, I wept for over an hour in my room that night. I have trained myself over the years to try to never view anything with contempt prior to investigating. If I would have read your material, I would have thought, cool, that's pretty neat. However, after experiencing the energy and the love, wow, I felt different, and it's not going away. So this is some of the impact on me.
The experience you're describing, if I can interject something here, is a concept in music. We could draw a parallel and say a symphony orchestra. There's a composer who creates the music. The piece, it has a theme, it has a motif, a pretty basic motif, and it can have all kinds of variations depending on whether or not the creator of that piece intended for it to have variations. But at least there's two or three, sometimes many more. And the orchestra plays this music. Now, if you take a group of musicians that have never played music together, and all from different backgrounds, you have the correct instrumentation and a modicum of professional ability or acumen amongst the group, it'll sound fairly good. It could even possibly be perfect. That potential lies within there, just because the people have never played music together doesn't mean they couldn't play it perfectly. That possibility is always a reality. Now, if you take this group of these same talented individuals and allow them to work toward one purpose, the proper and correct and the emotional performance of that same piece of music, they can possibly take it even higher than you can imagine. In other words, something can occur on a level beyond our normal three-dimensional experiences that could raise the consciousness of all the listening audience and even the group themselves. So what you're describing in the Council of the Elohim is a centered purpose, a focus, and obviously a choice, or at least the the right to be there because they have earned that right. They have mm-hmm. passed through their filters, as you said earlier, and they have moved mm-hmm. to the point to where they are willing to give their all for the benefit of the whole. And the amoeba...
Are you talking about the Elohim or individual?
Well, I'm drawing the analogy that anyone that would become a part of any, on any level, any group that functions as a one-celled being is in total agreement.
Mm-hmm. Well, so in a sense, there's a thing on our conference call that is similar to music. And what it is, and I'm sure you know exactly what I'm going to talk about, when musicians are really hot, they create a group energy. And when they have a group energy, they become one in other dimensions. When they become one in other dimensions, they become psychic. And they can anticipate each other's riffs and rhythms and chord changes. Mm-hmm. And when that happens, the oneness that they've generated expands into the room, and everyone in the room feels the vibe and mm-hmm. feels uplifted and feels joyful.
And they contribute to it, too.
Yeah, people that are sitting there watching and being part of the energy do not realize it, probably, but they are part of the energy. I mean, they're inspiring the musicians. It's kind of like, imagine a piano player who's playing all by himself with no one listening, and then the difference when he's playing with people listening, there's a feedback of energy. So what we're doing on the conference call is creating that same kind of energy, but not playing music, but just because we intend it to happen. You know, intention is one of the strongest powers we have. And I've learned to create an intention that invokes these energies. And when I believe it and other people are not resisting it, it comes in. And when it comes in, then I can feel the energies of these other group souls, and comes in on top of it, and, you know, people shut their eyes on the call, and they're feeling, you know, they can see light through their third eye, and they can feel energy on the top of their head. And, you know, they're scattered all over the United States. Now, the thing about it is, when somebody comes into the call that's holding maybe karma or negative patterns inside them, then this light on the call starts, first thing it does is it starts to push against the negative stuff in them to try to release it, to have it come out. And that's where somebody that's holding a shadow, a lot of shadow side, a lot of pain and trauma, then gets really, instead of feeling the high experience, they feel a heavy experience. And that's the dark night of the soul. Now, sometimes that experience can last for weeks or months. And unless a person knows what's happening, they'll retreat from it. They won't go through it because it's too painful. That's my experience. So it's good to understand that. That's why I'm talking about it, because the people on this that are listening to us tonight, it's like something to not be afraid of, because it's once you go through it, and once you're on the other side of it, you're done. You've actually taken steps up the ladder, and it's like you've arrived at a place on the ladder that's higher. You can look back at where you were, and you know you've changed. I know when I was a kid, I had so much pain locked up in my body that I didn't even know that I was in pain. Didn't know it. I don't know. I think I had the experience of somebody massaging me one time for the first time, and my shoulders relaxed, and I said, "Oh my God, I feel totally different." But you know, in my case, it was interesting. I learned a bit about the karmic pattern that created that pain in me. Did I ever talk about this on the show?
Well, not specifically. Not your particular personal problem, no.
Well, what I learned was my father, I learned this years ago, and I learned it in the way that I knew it had to be true. I learned it when I was writing music, and I had a reading from somebody who told me about a past life, but I was duplicating many of the patterns this life. And in the reading, he told me that my father had killed me in this past life. He poisoned me. And in this particular life, he had to give me life, and it was his way of balancing the karma. And that the guy told me this story, and I could feel energetically that it could be true. But I realized that I had written a song 6 years before he told me the story, which told the same story as he told me. And it was very specific. I was a troubadour in England, and the song was about a troubadour and a lady-in-waiting. And so I knew it was true. I knew the story was true. I knew my father had killed me. And what I realized was when I was growing up, he had the latent memory, subconscious, that he had killed me. And he wasn't happy to see me. I brought up a lot of guilt for him. He didn't know he killed me in any way in his conscious mind. All he knew is I brought up guilt, and he was angry that I was there, and I could never be good enough. And I had the feeling like I was never good enough, and I had to protect myself. So I used to hunch my shoulders all together so that it made me feel protected. And when I heard the story, and I realized it was true, it still took me many, many years to really release all of that so that wasn't an overwhelming thing in my life. And then I look at other people, and I can see how people, so many people have those kinds of things that are stuck in their body. If not from this lifetime, from other lifetimes, and they carry it oftentimes from lifetime to lifetime to lifetime, and it is so important to get through it, get over it. So that was my experience, and I would say that was one part of my dark night of the soul, getting over that. It took me years. Mm-hmm. It really did.
Now, if I may share something with you, and this is prefaced with the statement that there were many people that have a hard time dealing with the concept of reincarnation because there's all this dogma attached to it. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to acknowledge if you want to use the word believe, if you're even going to have faith in the Christian story that Christ arose and went to heaven, went to a higher consciousness, then you have to consider that others could possibly do this too. In fact, mm-hmm. we do it thousands of times. And anyway, the point I was going to make was that in one of my recollections of a past life, I had been a soldier in the Revolutionary War. In the time of George Washington, actually, I was murdered by fellow soldiers that were working against the best interests of the United States. Very much like the situation we have going on today. Very much where there's an entity from outside this realm that's trying to take control of the government, of the people, of the resources, of everything, and using other people to get there. It was roughly 2 years ago when I came to a realization that was going to be something that I was going to correct, because I was murdered I was set up and asked to be someplace and marched like a good soldier to my post and there to meet my murderers.
What country was that in?
The United States.
It was a previous life in this country?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
In what period
of time?
This was in the late 1700s.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in another life, I was a rather well-known composer. This was later on. I had focused mm-hmm. on music for whatever reason, and I found that in this lifetime, I have many of the same skills without having been taught these skills. The ability to orchestrate or to arrange music for a string orchestra is a pretty complex issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew how to write the bowing markings for a string score. And I knew mm-hmm. the proper voicings. And these are things I just knew intuitively.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I went to music school, they were teaching me the elementary version of what I recalled from my other experiences. So these things are very real. And certainly there was pain. When I came to see this former lifetime as a soldier, I had the picture Valley Forge, the triangular hats,
mm-hmm.
the muskets, the colorful uniforms. I was not a British soldier. I was in the American Army, and it was. It was betrayal and treachery. That's what was involved in it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a group of people acting on behalf of foreign interests. They had been bribed, and they were traitors, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
how do you feel that carried forward into your life this lifetime?
Well, look what I'm doing right now. I'm exposing government corruption.
Right. Okay. you're getting even.
Well, I don't look at it like that. What I'm doing at that time, I was murdered before I could get the message out.
Mm-hmm.
This time, I'm getting the message out.
I gotcha.
Okay. It's about the message. Now, why do they always kill the messenger? Well, it's been done throughout history, at least the last 13 to 15,000 years. They've killed the messengers because they want these things, these truths, these deeper truths, kept secret. Why do I not fear death now? Because I know that I can transcend it. I can overcome it.
Mm-hmm.
That it's just a passage from one reality to another. And there's a lot more to look forward to on the other side, I guarantee
mm-hmm.
you.
Mm-hmm.
So the concept of fear, which is taught to us here, to keep us away from our true self and our reality and setting a higher intention, is perpetrated for as a means of control, number one. As long as they control every aspect of our reality, then we are almost powerless to do anything about it. But you used the key word a few minutes ago. You said, I set my intention, or when I set my intention. And that's the thing. That's probably the biggest problem we have, is people on this planet allow others to set their intention for them. And, of course, mm-hmm. it's not their intention at all. It's the will of those doing the setting of the intention,
mm-hmm.
their intention. So they're imposing their intentions upon us, which is in violation of universal law. All creatures, all things were created with free will, with a sovereign free will and a sovereign intention
mm-hmm.
that can be recreated anytime by that individual. And no, the way it was given to everyone, no one has a right to supersede anyone else's intention. That is a universal law. That's the law of the Creator. And it's out of that law which is born the law of karma and the law of cause and effect, or the law of attraction, whatever you want to call it. Although those take on other elements, added accoutrements, if you want. But if everything is one, really these are just subdivisions of the oneness. They all lead in some aspect, they're like branches on the same tree.
Mm-hmm.
Or roots on the same tree. And, it's funny, I guess I mentioned the word roots. I was thinking about that word this morning while I was doing some research and writing this piece on Barack Obama and looking at the roots, discovering the real roots in the man's genealogy. And it dawned on me, I mean, this is something I know, but we take this for granted. We talk about my roots, our roots. The roots of the power mongers, the war mongers, the fear mongers, the central bankers, and the Illuminati, and those that are possessed with this demonic passion to murder. These roots grow in the dark. In fact, most roots on all plants, most, I say, grow in the dark. And so their roots are important to them to keep them in the dark. and the Illuminati, these New World Order wannabes, controllers of this reality we call planet Earth, are secretive because they don't want their roots exposed. Because in exposing one's roots, you expose the truth.
If you expose the roots, then you can't grow back again.
Well, yes, too. That exactly. Now, if you expose the roots to, long enough in the light, the plant has no more use for the roots.
Mm-hmm.
And they would not consider that possibly a tree could be something greater.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like a cottonwood tree could become the seed. And therein lies the freedom of the seed to blow in the wind and go anywhere. It's all a matter of perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a bit of a Zen statement I made there. Very simple, very primitive, but nonetheless just as true. Because when we leave our bodies as souls, that's exactly what we do. In the astral plane, when we're still alive in a physical body, or in a near-death experience where one leaves the body completely, or upon death from the physical body. So the constraints that we have here are those that we allow others to put upon us. We have bought into this victimized concept of society because everything we're shown in images is that of the victim. What is the news about? It's about massive spectacular traffic accidents, death takes the front row at every opportunity, whether it's a policeman or it's a burglar or it's a woman getting raped and murdered or a child, or doesn't matter. The thing that people fear the most is death because they know the least about it. They know the least about their true nature. So these things are played on us. They're playing us like a Tennessee banjo with the media. And these belief systems are so thick and so layered that when you give someone the opportunity to discover something about themselves, they're almost afraid to do it for fear that they might have to let everything go, that it has no real basis or no real value. And they have to question, what have I done my whole life? If none of this is real, why am I putting so much attention on it? And what will I replace it with? You see?
Mm-hmm.
So there are a lot of reasons why people will, on their own, fight their own spiritual progress.
Mm-hmm.
And they do it for very selfish reasons. They do it for their own reasons. They don't do it for the good of the whole.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of what they're missing out on.
Mm-hmm.
So here I am preaching to the choir, but I'm just sharing this with you because
it's part of what we're talking about today, I think. Well, in any case, I would like to suggest that those of you that are listening tonight should request my book so that I feel happy that it's getting out. And if you want to. I mean, it's free will, but I'd like...
Why don't you tell them how to get your book? What's the process?
Yeah, well, all you got to do is send me an email at winfree@yahoo.com, and I will email them the book back as a attachment. And everyone, of course, is invited to check into my conference lines. But read the book and see if it resonates. It's called Questions and Answers with the Elohim. And if you want to read the story, go to conversationswithmygirlfriend.com. And it tells the story of how all this happened to me. And I would be honored to share it with you and have you check into my line, because what's happening is we're creating, you know, if you have a community, if you have a bunch of people that you're connected to and you're connected with spirit, this may not be important to you. But so many people are isolated, insulated, single, whatever. And this is a way to actually be part of something and contribute to something on a very high level. And I would be honored to share it with you. But, you know, read the book and see if it all resonates. And then follow up. And that's probably winfree, winfree@yahoo.com. And this is probably a good time to end the show, and maybe next time somebody will come on and we can have a conversation with them. But, you know, I'll tell you, Don, it actually helps the energy. You know, it's like, how can I say it? The people you're listening, you know how we talked about, you know, when somebody plays a musical piece, how the audience becomes a part of it, right? Well, if people read the book and they open up their energies to this, if we do a live channeling, it'll be far easier, and you'll get better information out, because otherwise they have to talk to everyone like they don't believe that they're real, and it's harder. It's harder to get the right the vibe going. But in any case, that's my pitch for something for free. Are you there, Don? Hello, Don. Don? Hello? Hello? Hello?
Stay on the line.
Oh. Hello? Beth?
occasion that paid off. My devotion not enough. Leaving everything behind. Seeing what you got in mind. And now you're somewhat beautiful to me. You know I'm not in love, but out of time.
Oh, no, out of time.
And I'm jaded, but I made it home. Yeah, I'm wasted. Now you know I hate it when you wear me out. Yeah, I blame it all on you bringing me down.
And we're back on Evident Footprints. Evidently, our message got a little bit too spiritual for the powers that be. They have completely shut down my internet. And hopefully the listening audience hasn't given up on us. These things happen. If my show ever signs off without me saying, have a good night, you know that I'll be back to do that. I will not leave my audience in a lurch. And we have Wynn Free back with us. Wynn, you were in the process of recommending that everyone read your book. And I second that emotion.
Just email me, Wynn Free, W-Y-N-N-F-R-E-E, yahoo.com. Order, you know, I recommend you reading The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce because there's an explanation of how everything is happening on this planet and how important this period is. And that... Most people do not realize that they're determining their future of lifetimes big time right now, and all this material explains it. So, Don, thank you for having me on the show. We're supposed to be on again next Wednesday. And thank you, Seth. Thank you, Don Newsom, who's in the background. He's probably in bed by now. And that's it.
Well, the next time we've got to have an invocation of the light so that we don't get bumped off the call.
That's a good idea.
Okay. Wynn, thank you so much for being on the show. And to my listening audience, sorry for the interruption. It's beyond my control. I didn't invent the Internet. Al Gore did, or at least he says he did. I just use it like everyone else. So... I want to wish everyone a peaceful, light-filled, and love-filled night, and have a good night.
Good night.
Creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints,